As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The presenting sponsor for today's episode of Head of the Pack is Visa, a network working for everyone.
Welcome back to the latest post-game Head of the Pack. I'm Matt Schneidman here with Bill Huber. We're coming to you around 2 a.m. from the Lambeau Field press box. Packers with a 35-17 win over the Lions. For a while there, it looked like these guys might start the season 0-2. You know, they were trailing at halftime 17-14, but then they outscored the Lions 21-0 in the second half. The offense kept the defense off the field largely until the game was out of reach. Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, Aaron Jones, Robert Tonyan, the playmakers who they had to feed, came to play, delivered when they needed to. And now the Packers are 1-1 heading to Santa Clara next week for a Sunday night football matchup against the 49ers, which should be a great game. So what I want to start with here, Bill, is, you know, can you really take much away from this game? The Packers are supposed to beat the Lions. What I learned is that the Packers can still beat up on, you know, one of the worst teams in the league when they want to. I don't think this performance tells us, oh, week one was just a mirage. We shouldn't take anything from that game. We should just forget about it. But, you know, the Packers play in a bad division. They should beat up on the teams in their division. And in that case, they'll probably make the playoffs. So they did what they had to do tonight. It took a little bit longer than you would have liked to see, but they did it. And no, Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones and the other guys did not forget how to play football.
Yeah, it's been a long week of social media, hasn't it, Matt?
Seriously.
Good. Man, oh, man. You're right. I mean, there's not much to be gleaned from it. The Packers have always been, not always, but, you know, for the better part of a decade now, have been a team that has to take a lead, step on the gas and make the other team chase. And that feeds into what they want to do on defense. And that was the formula tonight. They took the lead. Detroit didn't have nearly the manpower to catch up, you know, even with Kevin King playing in the secondary, the Lions don't have any receivers worth a darn. So no, I mean, the pack isn't back. We'll find out a hell of a lot more next week because the 49ers, they beat the crap out of the Lions, even though the final score didn't say that. They beat the crap out of them for most of that game. And then they pretty handily beat Philly on Sunday. We'll get a real gauge where they're at here on 6 days from now.
Yeah, and obviously the main story is Aaron Jones tonight. I say only. He had 115 total yards, 6 catches for 48 yards and 3 touchdowns. That's the real story here. 17 rushes for 67 yards and a touchdown. First Packers running back with 3 touchdown catches in a game since 1942 against the Chicago Cardinals. And my man, let me get his name. He looks like he could still do it. I mean, I know he's, you know, probably not in that great of a shape anymore, but Andy Yurum,
yep.
And what, you said he had an even better day than Jones did on that day.
Yeah, what a slacker Aaron Jones is. He couldn't even compare to what Andy Yurum. Aaron, I mean, he had 3 touchdowns for, I don't know, he had a couple 70-yarders in there too. So Cecil Isbell was the quarterback that day, by the way. And Andy Yurum is not going to be sitting up for the Packers. He unfortunately died in 1984.
Oh, may he rest in peace.
Yes. At the age of David Bakhtiar, I'd be interested. He died at the age of 69.
There you go, I guess. Okay. Oh,
God, it's a late night.
So Aaron Jones's performance was extra meaningful tonight because it was his first home game since the passing of his father back on April 6th of this year. ESPN revealed on the broadcast that Alvin Jones Sr. died of COVID-19 at age 56. And, you know, Alvin Jones Sr. was a huge part in Alvin Jones being Aaron Jones's twin, hence the senior. So Alvin was a huge part in Aaron's football life. And what Aaron said tonight was, you know, he taught me how to overcome adversity. And that was both on and off the field. And in a football sense, I know there's much more important adversities to overcome in life. But in a football sense, Aaron Jones had a terrible week one, 5 carries for 9 yards, 2 catches for 13 yards. And he bounces back and the Packers bounce back this week. And he essentially carries them to a much needed win. And he said, you know, this was really special to honor my dad because he taught me, you know, a man is made from what they respond to or how they respond. And after his first touchdown, he kind of patted his chest and pointed up to the sky. The interesting story from tonight is that after his second touchdown catch, Aaron Jones was wearing a necklace with a small black football attached to it containing his father's ashes. And he actually lost it in the end zone. They haven't found it that we know of. A Packers spokesperson told me about 2 hours after the game that they had not found it, despite the best efforts of them, the ESPN crew, the Lambeau grounds crew. It was funny enough, right before we started recording, we saw someone out on the field. Nobody's been on the field for hours. We saw someone out on the field. It looked like head trainer Brian Engel by his blonde hair. I'm not positive because like I'm a little tired and my eyes are fading in and out, but someone was pacing back and forth in the end zone for about 10 minutes where Jones lost the necklace looking for it. So hopefully they find it. But Jones kind of smiled and said, if I was to lose it anywhere, my dad would be smiling knowing I lost it in the end zone. But 4 touchdowns, what a way to honor Pops, who wasn't in the stands tonight, but about 15 friends and family members were. And Jones said that was great to see.
Doesn't that tell you all you need to know about Jones? Is it's 2 o'clock in the morning almost as we record this, and there's somebody out on the field looking for him. I mean, that tells you all you need to know about this guy is someone's willing to go out there in the dead of night. It's been a monsoon here for a few hours and there's someone out there searching for it. They'd have been screwed without him though, Matt, turning back to football. You know, that first half, the first drive where Green Bay scored to tie the game, Jones touched the ball 7 times, including the touchdown. The second drive, a 3-and-out punt after 3 consecutive passes where Jones doesn't get the ball. The third drive where they're now losing 14-7, Jones gets it 6 times, including a touchdown. He was the guy who really kept them afloat. I know we're all going to talk about Rodgers, or not, we're not, but you know, with 4 touchdown passes, Rodgers will be the focal point like always. But without Aaron Jones in the first half, they'd have been up a creek.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the need to establish the run. They couldn't get anything going in the running game last week against the Saints, and that was in part to they only had 12 offensive plays before the 2-minute drive at the end of the first half. So they couldn't really get into a rhythm. And Matt LaFleur said after the game, we abandoned the run too quickly. Granted, they couldn't really get to it when they were down, you know, with so few possessions. And by the time they kind of got in a rhythm, they were already down by 2 scores. So they couldn't really afford to run it that much. But as you said, Aaron Jones had 6 carries for 30 yards on the opening drive. 5 yards per carry for those who can't do simple math, which is very good. So they kind of established that early. It kept the Lions on their toes and made the Packers not very one-dimensional. I mean, they didn't run the ball great on the night. Jones had less than 4 yards per carry, but that included also his 1-yard touchdown run. What I thought the best thing the Packers offense did was keep their defense off the field there in the second half. They had long possessions. You know, in the second half, they had an 8-play, 87-yard touchdown drive. They had an 11-play, 75-yard touchdown drive. And then in the fourth quarter, the 5-play, 23-yard touchdown drive. But they won the time of possession by about 7 minutes after losing it pretty significantly last week. And it took a little while, but Aaron Rodgers finally got into a rhythm and looked like the Aaron Rodgers we saw last year, with specifically on that 50-yard bomb to Devontae Adams and the 22-yard touchdown pass to Robert Tonyan.
With about 4 minutes to go in the game, he had as many incompletions as touchdowns. He was 22 out of 26 with four touchdowns. That was that's a hell of a good night. Let's talk defense, Matt. Look, the Lions stink defensively, so what, you know, they carved them up. They gave up 17 points in the first half. At that point, I believe, and I have it here in my notebook, I got to quick go dig it up here. Through the first six quarters of the season, Green Bay's defense is on the field for 12 possessions. That is not including the take a knee by the Saints in the first half. Nine scores in 12 possessions. Joe Barry's defense getting massacred. And then suddenly they somehow got it fixed. I mean, I don't know if it's fixed, but they found some answers. So what do you make out of that? Again, you know, Goff's not a bad quarterback. The running backs are legit. Hockenson's a really good tight end. The receivers are terrible. But what do you make out of a defense one?
It was really concerning in the first half. And, you know, against better offenses, they will struggle. And I think this could be a Packers team that is going to have to win games, you know, 31-28 and 35-30. And I think they're capable of doing that. But the run defense, it was all right tonight. Not great. You know, the Lions ran 19 times for 108 yards, which is 5.7 yards per carry. Not ideal, obviously. But, you know, for the Packers, that's not horrific. Their pass defense, there are still too many miscommunications. I mean, you're going to have some. Adrian Amos said, you know, communication is never going to be 100% when we talked to him last week. But Quintez Cephas wide open on the first touchdown. The Lions just march right down the field. Kevin King giving up another explosive play. You have Devondre Campbell on TJ Hockenson. It was all right coverage, but, you know, you're going to lose that matchup 100 times out of 100. You have a penalty by Devondre Campbell pulling Jared Goff's face mask when he's already going down. It's just these mistakes that are going to bite you against better teams. And I know Devondre Campbell had the interception, and I know Kevin King had the nice pass breakup in the end zone, but those two guys are liabilities. And if I have one takeaway from the defensive side of the ball today, it's that Eric Stokes needs to play over Kevin King. I understand Kevin King has the experience, but And maybe my recency bias is showing since the last three games. Kevin King, who also got hurdled clean tonight, hasn't been great the last three games. And Eric Stokes has been good when given the chances the last two games. But Eric Stokes had two really nice fourth down pass breakups tonight. One in the red zone or near the red zone, one in the end zone when the game was already out of reach. But that, you know, the point stands. When's the last time we saw Kevin King have plays in important situations like that on fourth down when the other team's going for it and getting his head turned around? I believe on both plays, Eric Stokes was not facing the ball when it was thrown. And, you know, he gets his head turned around, doesn't commit a penalty and knocks the ball down or gets his hand in the way. Maybe I'm jumping the gun too soon and maybe it's a knee-jerk reaction, but has Eric Stokes earned more playing time, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, well, look, I think we probably talked about this last week. Everybody knows who Kevin King is at this point. He's not going to suddenly become who he is until he turned into a Pro Bowl caliber guy. I mean, it's just not going to happen. At least with Stokes, there's the upside with the two breakups tonight. He tackles well. Yeah, you know, we talked about this live, Matt. I'm not saying Shannon Sullivan is the world's greatest slot defender. But give me Sullivan. Give me Jair Alexander, Eric Stokes, and Shannon Sullivan. Kevin King is not a slot defender. You know, I'll be interested to talk to Barry on Thursday to see what his thinking there was. I'm sure that he had some logic on that. But, mm-hmm. You know, they're paying a pretty decent amount of money to keep Sullivan here this year. He's not a bad player. I know he got beat by the Bucks in the first quarter of the championship game, and he had a couple other rough outings, but by and large, he's a pretty decent player last year. To me, that's a better secondary than running King out there.
I agree.
I don't get it. You know, he was that first deep pass to Cephus. King was in a good spot, wasn't he?
Yeah, he kind of got twisted around off the line.
He just starts flailing.
Yeah, on that play, I watched the replay back once, and he kind of gets out of position off the line, and Cephus beats him with a move, but he gets back in position because Goff, you know, stood in the pocket and scrambled around for so long. And it looked like he was in great position, but he just wasn't there to make the play. And that's where Eric Stokes has been better, is when he's in position, his ball skills have been better to make the play. And like you said, Kevin King kind of just flails his arm, and that sets up the opening drive touchdown for the Lions. But I don't expect them to make the change. I don't expect them to tell us whether they're considering making a change. It's always going to be an open competition, but I don't see, you know, what is it? Insanity is defined by doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. I don't think it's, maybe it is insanity to keep trotting out Kevin King and expecting him to become like some lockdown corner. He's going to give up these big plays, and Eric Stokes has not yet proven that he will. So I think they'll maybe ease Stokes in a little bit instead of making some drastic change. But why? Why wait if you have a better guy on the sideline?
Yeah. But then again, you go to that first touchdown where Cephus is open by, 15 yards? And I'm not exaggerating. When Goff threw the ball, he was open by 15 yards, and the only guy in the neighborhood was Stokes. Now, I have no idea if someone else blew coverage and he just happened to be the wrong guy there, and we're all pointing fingers on just because he's the closest guy there. I mean, who knows? But that was a bad play. You know, we had Jim Mora Jr. on. I talked to him before the draft about cornerback play, and he calls it a DB panic mode, where you got these DBs who have all the tools in the world, and the practice field all adds up. And when the games come, and when the ball comes, they just panic. And that seems like Kevin King on that play. He's there, and he's a 6'3" guy with this great length. A play like that should be right in his wheelhouse, and it's just like it's panic mode. The ball is there's a play there to be made, and his just arms are like, I'm like, you can't see me. His arms are like that. When you go to like the strip mall and they got that inflatable thing and it's blowing around in the wind, it's like Kevin King playing pass coverage.
Yeah, exactly. we'll see on that. I think the biggest concern with the defense is the lack of pass rush.
Oh, and, Lord almighty, yes.
And I know that Za'Darius Smith is out. And yes, Preston Smith had a nice pressure that forced that intentional grounding, which I don't think is a great call, because I saw someone tweet this, and it might have been Ben Baldwin who writes for us, but you know, how can you get an intentional grounding call when your arm's being hit
that
at the same time?
Yeah, that was
not a great call. And and then Rashawn Gary had the quote unquote sack, but he had a really nice rush on the right tackle, and Goff kind of fumbled the ball himself, and Gary just touched him and credited with a sack. But far too many times, Jared Goff had too much time back there against a Lions offensive line that has a rookie right tackle playing left tackle. And you said a former Iowa defensive lineman playing right tackle?
Yes, that's accurate. Matt Nelson played D-line at Iowa, and he's starting at right tackle for him.
And like, you need to do better. And when's the last time you saw Dean Lowry and Tyler Lancaster consistently affect the quarterback? Even Kenny Clark. Like,
yeah, Clark had a good rush tonight. Well, he had one good rush. You know, when Za'Darius went out, we talked to Joe on Friday, and I said, "Do you have enough guys to give you pass rush, or are you going to go have to create it?" And he lists off Preston and Rashawn Gary, and then he mentioned Dean Lowry. I mean, what? What? Dean Lowry? No. If you're counting on Dean Lowry to give you a pass rush,
you're screwed.
Well, this is what you get. You got what you get tonight. You know, there's this chicken and egg thing of what is better, what's more important, the pass rush or coverage. What if you don't have either?
Yeah.
You got these guys. I mean, Jair is great, but you know, Jair, what's that phrase that they said about Deion? Jair can cover, you know, two-thirds of the earth is covered with water, and the other third by J.R. Alexander, but...
Yeah, exactly.
I think I probably butchered that, but You can't cover everybody.
Yeah, they need some pass rush. And, you know, next week they play a 49ers team who I think is going to start me at running back because they have so many people hurt. And Jimmy Garoppolo, if they still start him, which I believe they are, has to pass the ball. And they need to get some pass rush against him. They really do. And the 49ers will probably still find a way to run the ball, but that should be priority one for this defense this week, is finding out how to affect the quarterback, because, you know, they flushed Jameis Winston out of the pocket, but he looked like 2004 Madden Michael Vick last week. Even Jared Goff was scooting for some yards today. He ran for 46 yards on four carries. That was, he was the Lions' leading rusher. I mean, most of the quarterbacks in this league can run if you give them space. So you need to not just pressure the QB, but pressure him and not allow him lanes to escape. And the Packers have not done that, and they need to find a way to do that.
Yeah, that's the conundrum. You can wait for Zadarius to get back, but when's he going to get back? I mean, I realize what the IR rules are, but when's he really going to get back?
Week six, maybe.
Yeah. And again, this is a guy who had no training camp. So if you take his training camp, his week one practices and his week one, he's been on the field five times. So, you can't expect him to come back and be 40 snap a game. It's going to take a while. Even under the best case, it's going to be a while before he becomes an impact guy. And we've all had back problems, right? I mean, you were mentioning it the other day that your back.
Oh my God.
You just never know. And he obviously being an NFL player, a bit more violent than our gig.
I don't know, Bill. My mattress is pretty violent. I've had some bad back problems. I'm not even 26 and a half years old, and my back has been hurting. So I am going on IR. I will be back to cover the week six game against the Bears. In the meantime, I will be rehabbing from home and partaking in Zooms, but hopefully my back heals up.
It's a major problem, though. I mean,
yeah,
there is one play where I can't say I watched those guys every down, but I watched Chauncey Rivers on one play. It was a passing play, and it was like me. You know, it was like me trying to get around a wall. It was just nothing was happening. You know, and Jonathan Garvin had a late pressure late in the game, but he didn't do anything. They got some major problems, which is fine if you got cover guys, but they don't have enough of those either.
Exactly. Their cornerback depth is not great. Devondre Campbell, not great, despite the interception. Don't let one play fool you. Don't let Kevin King's one nice PBU fool you, Devondre Campbell's interception. These guys have some problems on defense, and yeah, they didn't allow one of the worst teams in the league to score in the second half, but they have the 49ers and the Steelers up next. And, you know, they have a Bengals offense that might be able to do some things that when Joe Burrow isn't throwing interceptions on three straight pass attempts like he did against the Bears on Sunday. Like, they play teams like the Ravens, the Seahawks, the Rams. Like, those ain't the Lions. So you're gonna need to fix something. And luckily for the Packers, they avoided a disastrous 0-2 start. This division is theirs for the taking, and tonight showed you why they should still be the front runners to win it, because they should beat teams. You know, on paper, you can say games against the Ravens or the Steelers or the Rams or the Seahawks or the Cardinals. Maybe the Packers shouldn't win those, but they should win games like these against the Bears, against the Vikings. And if they can do that, then they should have the fast track to the division title, which would be a playoff spot. And seems like they would be. A couple other quick hitters before we go on to your questions. Thank you for getting those in at such a late hour. Randall Cobb got involved a little bit, 3 catches for 26 yards, had that 14-yard catch on the 3rd and 14. I think they'll start to ease him in a little bit more. And then 2 other things from me, and you're free to chip in with whatever. Packers got a punter. Corey Bohorquez is pretty good. You know, his hang time is a little unorthodox, but that's by design, I think. And his placement on punts is pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way his ball flies through the air. And in the return game, Kylin Hill had the best kick return I've seen in my 2+ years covering the Packers. You know, bounced off one of his own guys, found an opening up the right sideline, and returned it 41 yards and hurdled the kicker, I believe. And that was nice. Gave the Packers great starting field position. So some special teams bright spots and, you know, starting to get Randall Cobb involved were a couple more positives for the Packers.
Yeah, those Bohorquez punts right to the sideline. Everybody talks about hang time and this and that, but if you can put that ball right at the sideline, it just makes life so much easier for your coverage unit.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously that guy has nowhere to go. So yeah, he's a real weapon for sure. I got nothing else for you, Matt. How about Devontae Adams tonight? Was that like the quietest 100-yard receiving game you've ever seen?
Yeah. Everyone
Aaron Jones is so good, and Rodgers is so good. He's just unstoppable. When these guys can get the ball moving a little bit, he's just such a bugger to handle. It was, other than the 50-yard gain, all those other yards just kind of snuck up on you. It'll be interesting, though. The 49ers they've done such a good job taking away the Jones and the Adams of the world. Rodgers spent all of training camp raving about Valdes-Scantling and raving about Lazard, and those guys haven't done anything in 2 games.
Lazard didn't have a target tonight.
Doesn't even show up on the stat sheet other than that he played. 0-for-4 to Valdes-Scantling. I know Rodgers was ticked about those, took the blame for all those, but those receivers that Rodgers raved about all summer long, this is going to be the game where they need to show up.
Yeah, and Valdes-Scantling could have had 2 catches for, 120 yards and 2 touchdowns, but Rodgers overthrew him twice. Rodgers said 3 times. I don't know what the third one was. I just know the 2 that I remember.
At the goal line, was it that first series where he had a little pressure in his face? At the 1, I think he threw a slant behind Valdes, or maybe it was a receiver screen behind Valdes-Scantling.
That might have been it, yeah.
Was that the second possession?
I'm just thinking overthrows, and Rodgers obviously took the blame for both of those, as he should, I think. But definitely some things to iron out. Not perfect, but luckily for them, this game where they weren't perfect came against the Detroit Lions.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So let's get to your questions. We have some from Ian Larkin. Is Joe Barry a bust? Any chance he gets fired in the middle of the season? The defense seems disorganized and confused. That's the interesting thing. It's always tough to say, how much is coaching, how much is players, and you'll never really know, because what we see is probably not what's happening. And as much as football, as much as I like to think I know what's going on, which isn't nearly as much as some others who are far more in the know than myself, but like on the Lions' first touchdown, why is Quintez Cephus wide open? Is it because Kevin King and Darnell Savage are miscommunicating before the snap, or is it Eric Stokes' fault because he's late to get over? Like, we'd need to literally sit down with those guys and ask, and even then, they may just take the blame or say something general. Like, Joe Barry might say, we just need to communicate better. Like, we may not get the actual answer. So it's tough to actually pinpoint what's on the players, what's on the coaches, but the lack of communication, I tend to think, is more on the coaches, because you need to have your guys know what their assignments are on any given play. And maybe Joe Barry is doing that. Maybe it's on the players. So I'm back to, I don't know whose fault it is, but it's someone's fault. That's the point. These simple mistakes are someone's fault. And it's easy to blame the defensive coordinator for all this, but I do think some of it is the players, because like we said before, insanity is defined by doing the same thing over and over and expecting similar results. And the Packers have trotted out essentially the same defense the last 2 years and expect it to get better, and it hasn't.
Right. you know, we talked earlier about the Kevin King flailing this Cephas play. I wish I had a stopwatch to know how long Jared Goff had back in the pocket. Green Bay's rush wasn't, they were nowhere near him. He must have had 5 seconds back there, and they're still nowhere near him.
He could have taken a nap back there.
He could have taken a nap back there. I took a nap on my desk.
And you woke up and he was still in the pocket.
It was brutal. So that's not the coordinator's fault.
No.
At the end of the day, you guys have got to go win. You got to win your one-on-one matchups, as Matt LaFleur says 10 times a week to us. You got to win. But you're right, the communication breakdowns. I don't know how that's anything other than coaching. Now, what you could say, it's week two with the new defense, and maybe they got some kinks to work out.
Maybe they got some kings to work out. That's there the one go. Thing that I think is it's on coaching for who you put on the field.
Sure.
And if Kevin King keeps messing up, yeah, that's Kevin King's fault, but it's also on the coaching staff for continuing to put him out there.
So to the original, one of his parts of his question was firing him. Look, week eight, you're at Arizona. Arizona scored like 100 points in the first two games. Week nine, Kansas City. Enough said. Week 10, Seattle. They can score.
Oh, I forgot.
Week
Kansas
11,
City.
Week 11's Minnesota. They scored a bunch last week. There's a week 13 bye. After facing a whole gauntlet of really good offenses, if you still are really, really struggling defensively, but you're still in the playoff hunt, that week 13 bye might be a time. Again, maybe Barry is going to work miracles here over the next 2 months and this conversation becomes stupid, but if the struggling continues and they face all these really good offenses during the second half of the season, I could see it. Remember, Nathaniel Hackett was fired by Jacksonville.
Yeah. After they went to the AFC Championship.
Yep. They were horrible. The coach was feeling the heat and they fired him probably about the same time in the season. So it doesn't happen very often, but it does happen.
I would love to spice up the variety of these questions, but most of them are about Joe Barry and we just covered that. So let's go from Jared McDonald. Who is Royce Newman and how do the Packers keep selecting solid offensive linemen? I will say, the Packers had three interior offensive linemen starters tonight who had combined two starts career. And that was Josh Myers and Royce Newman last week against Jacksonville. John Runyon Jr., the 2020 sixth round pick, made his first career start tonight because Lucas Patrick, who would normally start at left guard, didn't really practice this week while working through the concussion protocol. And we'll have to watch the game back. But I thought Rodgers had ample amounts of time back there for the most part. He got sacked a couple times. He said it was because he ran into some sacks. You know, it wasn't the cleanest game from the offensive line. I think Runyon might have allowed one. Elton Jenkins might have allowed one. He seemed upset after that one for some reason. I'll have to look back and see why. But there were some holding calls. Not a perfect game, but about as good as you can expect from, you go from Elton Jenkins, Corey Linsley, and Lucas Patrick last year, three veterans who know what they're doing, to John Runyon Jr., Josh Myers, and Royce Newman. Like, that could be an utter disaster, but they treaded water, and that's about all you need.
Yeah, we'll find out next week.
Oh.
Honestly, do you know the Lions? I mean, you probably do because of this game, but I mean, coming into this game, I didn't know any of the Lions defensive linemen. I mean, I knew the outside linebackers of Quora and Flowers, but their interior guys, I couldn't tell you until this week, so.
The 49ers have DeForest Buckner.
They're loaded. So we'll find out.
No, not DeForest Buckner. Sorry, DeForest Buckner's on the Colts. Eric Armstead, Nick Bosa, Javon Kinlaw, first round pick. I mean, that's a serious defensive line. And
yes, Rodgers said to use the words fearsome pass rush. I believe that's exactly what he said.
That's going to be an interesting game.
So we'll find out about those guys. Steve Clark wants to know, with the laser show returning to Green Bay, who do you guys think Aaron Rodgers would pick for his favorite backup?
Well, you've been covering the team ever since Aaron Rodgers has been the starter, so I'll let you answer that question.
I would go Matt Flynn. But boy, Tim Boyle. I mean, you were with obviously the Boyle stuff. I mean, he spoke with him with real reverence.
Yeah,
with him, really respected him for everything that he did. Complimented him all the time for all the work that he did behind the scenes. So I would say those two are the runaway winners. Not BJ Coleman for you long time people out there. Here we go. From Bombardi Lives. Beating the Lions doesn't make me feel better about week one. We keep talking about the Packers as legit Super Bowl contenders. Do you still think that's a fair assessment? Feels like the start of another season where we win a bunch of games and get completely blown out in the playoffs.
You know, I think it's far too early to tell what type of team this really is. You know, I mean, the Saints got blown out by the Carolina Panthers this week. The Kansas City Chiefs blew an 11-point lead in the fourth quarter. The Las Vegas Raiders beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh. There's so much parity in the NFL that I think you kind of just have to not try and make it make sense. Would I be surprised if the Packers beat the 49ers next week? No, but I also would not be surprised if they lost by 30 again.
Right.
Right now, my early gut feeling is that the Packers are a team that are going to win 10 or 11 games because they put up a lot of points. Their defense will have a couple good games, but more games like tonight and week one, and the Packers will win the division and, you know, maybe lose in the second round of the playoffs. Not get a bye, but lose in the divisional round. Now, could that perception change if they go in and beat the 49ers and beat the Steelers and go on a run here? Sure. Especially because, like, the Seattle Seahawks were great, but they blow it to the Tennessee Titans. The LA Rams almost blew it to a Colts team who, you know, lost Carson Wentz and has a kind of a makeshift offensive line in there. Like, there's just so much parity in the NFL, more so than any other sport. And with the exception of a few teams, Lions, Jaguars, Falcons, you know the ones I'm talking about. Anyone can give anyone a battle on any given night.
There was there were 10 games this week between the team that won in week one and the team that lost. The week one losers won 6-4. There's like nothing more irrelevant in the entire world than week one football. I mean, Rodgers was picking on the perception of their team. It's everybody's overreacts over week one. And I feel like this question is there too. Judging by my Twitter from the last 7 days, the Packers should have lost this game too and probably should have forfeited the season. And so they look, the Lions are stink, but they beat them handily. People just get so hung up on week one. And I think Packer fans in particular get so hung up on any loss or any chink in the armor that they just feel like the team is terrible. Maybe they're not going to be any good.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean, Bill,
don't get hung up on week one of the Saints. Like when week eight comes along, don't think about this. But people are going to think about the Saints game for weeks. It's just
the Miami Dolphins beat the New England Patriots in week one, and everyone's right. Saying, "Oh, it's just Mac Jones having, you know, rookie struggles, and the Dolphins could be a surprise team." But then week two, the Patriots blow out the Jets, and they're all of a sudden, oh, the Patriots are back. Mac Jones is the next guy. Mm-hmm. And the Dolphins lose 35-0 to the Bills, and it's all the Dolphins are dead. They stink. Like, yeah, maybe it's some of our doing, and we love it because, you know, it's what makes the NFL the best sport to cover because it's the most newsworthy. But opinions on teams and the perception of them changes so much. Like, you think back to the last two seasons, yes, the Packers' two big losses came in the middle of the season after they had big starts. But, like, if you think back 2 years ago, the season opener, the Packers scored 10 points against the Chicago Bears. Yes, they only let up three. But then that offense went on to help get them to the NFC Championship game. You think back to the beginning of last season. And what was the first game last season?
Scored 1 million points at Minnesota.
Oh, that's right. They did score a lot of points, but the defense wasn't good in the first couple weeks. Then they had the week two game against the Lions where they came out soft. And then week three, they allowed 30 to the Saints without Michael Thomas and couldn't tackle Alvin Kamara. But then later in the season, Za'Darius Smith came on, Preston Smith came on, Jair was shutting everybody down. Like, it's cliche to say it's a 17 game season. It's one game at a time, but it really is. And if these first 2 weeks, like we've said, showed you anything, it's that teams can drastically change based on the first 2 weeks. Like, the Denver Broncos and Las Vegas Raiders are the only two undefeated teams in the AFC, if I'm not mistaken. I believe so. Like, and there are a couple in the NFC. I believe it's the 49ers, the Seahawks, the Rams, the Buccaneers, and the Panthers. So nobody knows what's going to happen this season. And I think 6 days, they travel to California, which is a place they've been not great the past couple of years. They beat the 49ers there last year because the 49ers had me and you playing. and they had a bunch of COVID issues and injury issues. But it'll be a great litmus test for where this team is, because the 49ers are healthy again, except for at running back. The Packers are mostly healthy, and they're considered one of the best teams in the NFC too. So it'll be a great litmus test for where the Packers are early in the season, at least.
Absolutely. I want to see Jair Alexander against Deebo Samuel. That'll be a hell of a matchup.
Yes, it will. That'll be a great matchup.
From the original Ran Man, Amari Rodgers was hyped big time during the preseason as a weapon, and then hyped even more once Cobb signed as a mentor. And he has yet to have a target from number 12. Pretty sure he hasn't even seen the field with Aaron under center, any inside scoop. I would just say it's because of Randall Cobb's here. I don't think it's anything to do with Amari Rodgers. I just think that the Packers traded for Randall Cobb and they figured they better play the guy.
Yeah, there's no need to force feed Amari Rodgers. Right. He's, you know, hasn't looked great returning punts, but there's no need to force him into his first couple games as an NFL slot receiver. Amari Rodgers will be the slot receiver here eventually. And, you know, Randall Cobb is a veteran and he knows how to play football. And you'd rather that guy in than thrust a rookie in just because he might have more upside. I wouldn't read into it, you know, anything having to do with his development or lack thereof. I just think it's because of Randall Cobb. And for people who say, oh, he's stunting Amari Rodgers' growth, I've always been in the camp that Randall Cobb being here is a good thing for Amari Rodgers, if anything.
Yeah, also, and I realize that Cobb and Amari Rodgers are the prototypical slot guys, but not so much for LaFleur. I mean, he loves Alan Lazard in the slot.
Yeah.
It's just like having a tight end out there, a very capable, sure-handed tight end. So I know Alan Lazard's not a typical slot guy for a lot of teams, but he fits exactly what these guys want to do. So you're dividing up slot guys, not just with slot guys, but you want to have a big receiver out there, and they like to do the two tight end stuff. And there's just not a whole lot of snaps for those guys either. Yeah, you're right, though, Matt. I wouldn't read anything whatsoever into Amari Rodgers playing time.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you late next Sunday night, Monday morning. I'll be in Santa Clara. Can't wait to go back to that same press box I've been to 97 times since I started covering the NFL. The Packers play there every single year for some reason, but we'll see if this time is any different than the last time they played a healthy 49ers team there in 2019 when they got their doors blown off twice. But until then, we're getting a little delirious here. It's 2:30, but I'm Matt. He's Bill. You know where to find us. Thanks for listening.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.